women's right to access abortion, don't we? I mean, that's a critically important fact.
It is a critically important fact. And I think the distinguishing item right there is the misogyny. I mean, that poll really lays it clear that the distrust for women is the driver in the increase in support for abortion restrictions and other types of restrictions. And so when you take the sort of grand number of the fact that most people support in this country support abortion rights, I would assume that that includes most women who are also understanding that we can be trusted best with our own choices, you know, despite the fact that it was white women voters who put Trump in office. So there is a lot of disconnect when it comes to this country and abortion politics.
What would you like to see as someone who's followed these stories in terms of the best case scenario for reversing this rightward trend toward ending Roe versus Wade? A lot of people, you know, groups like Planned Parenthood would say support Planned Parenthood now that they can't access that federal funding for Title X family planning. They're having to fundraise directly from people. But aside from personally, financially supporting groups like Planned Parenthood, what do you think needs to happen?
Well, first of all, everybody needs to remember and be reminded that abortion is still legal in all 50 states in this country and remains so. As one of the unfortunate effects of all of these abortion restrictions, whether or not they pass, is that they sow confusion and terror in people. And so you still have the right to seek care if that's what you need. But what I would love to see happen, frankly, is a way to move this conversation out of the courts. Because we should not be relying on appointed judges to recognize what is fundamental human rights. And so that requires a significant political will. And that is my ultimate, you know, sort of wish list, is to get this beyond the battle of a partisan Supreme Court or a split Congress over whether or not we're going to pass something. That could be a passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, for example. So there are ways to rally around that. But ultimately, I do think that the conversation needs to go beyond a Roe framework in this country. And that is a difficult conversation to have.
Well, Jessica, hopefully your book will help towards starting that conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Jessica Mason Piclo, Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. And we've been discussing the new book that she's just co-authored with Robin Marty called The End of Roe versus Wade, Inside the Rights Plan to Destroy Legal Abortion. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, The Struggle with Alyssa.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Project Northwest. Friday, September 6th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge inside Mississippi Pizza in Portland. Project Northwest is a local zine that helps promote local hip-hop and R&B artists with an emphasis on showcasing artists that identify as Black and POC, LGBTQIA+, women, and artists who experience disabilities. This event will showcase Kayla J, Lil Swag, Zenith, and Matt Randyland. The show will be hosted by Harvey Bird. Again, that's Project Northwest, Friday, September 6th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge, 3552 North Mississippi in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Feet to the Fire campaign and protest Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to the Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to the Fire campaign and protest, Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You know, something like this. All right. Olivia, did you hear that? That was like Lil' Kim back in the day. So
just for you.
I know we're not going to be able to even think about having that uncut version on the radio, but that was Lil' Kim. Mm-hmm. I don't want DI tonight. It's like a throwback D-I-P-U, to
right?
Yeah. That's a throwback to like 1995, mm-hmm. the hardcore album. Anyway, this is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I'm in the studio with a longtime friend to the show and my longtime friend, Olivia Pace.
Hi, everybody.
So Olivia is with the Portland State University Student Union, even though you've graduated since the last time we spoke.
I am a transitioning out member, but there's still work to do. So we're still there.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. So what is the future of SUSU look like for 2019 and 20?
Well, so the student union's been around since about 2012-13 now, and we have fabulous new members and a lot of really strong, long-standing members. The future of SUSU looks like we may be at the helm of a win for the Disarm PSU campaign, and so we have a lot of members who are not ready to. Ooh, I wonder if y'all could hear me. A lot of members who are not ready to transition out until we get this win. The Board of Trustees of Portland State University on October 10th, for the first time, are holding a revote on the armament of campus security. Since they arm them against the wishes and screams and begs of students, staff, and faculty 5 years ago.
5 years.
After 5 years of struggle, of a struggle that's had ups and downs and lulls and has seen people through their entire degrees.
And through the end of their lives.
Yeah, through the end of their lives and through.
Alex Ethel Bakari, rest in peace, comrades with the student union.
We've lost people to this. We've been through a lot for all of this. And after campus police killed somebody, 4 years into the struggle, 3 years after campus security were armed. So after all of that, the Board of Trustees, the unelected governing body of Portland State University, is finally, for the first time, casting another vote on whether or not campus security should be armed. And so we have people who are not ready to be done. I know personally, I feel like I have a moral and ethical responsibility to continue with this work until that win is achieved.
I want anyone who has cared about the campaign over these last 5 years and more broadly care about the call for dissolving the structure of policing on the campus to come out. So it's 5 years since the Disarm PSU call began, but there's still a lot of work that was done before that. So like the student union will continue to fight for racial, economic, social justice on the campus, and will continue to be the blazing arrow. And I encourage that everyone show up. So I'll, of course, I'll be there with you every step of the way whenever they call.
Yeah, another former system member, Alyssa Pariah. It's, yeah, it's really important also to keep in mind that the work is not done when this demand is met. Disarming campus police is only one demand, but the purpose of that demand is to, in general, call into question the role of policing. Is a small microscopic push towards police abolition, and is a chance to, police officers love to talk about community policing.
Surveillance.
Exactly. Having a better hand in your community so they can know what's going on, know how they can mess with you, have more control of you, and all the while make it seem like they actually respect you when they don't, because they know your kids' names and your dog's name. So they like to talk about community policing, and they like to do it because it works, because there actually is value in communities having a role in their safety, but it doesn't look like benevolent police officers with guns who can kill you with impunity. It looks like the people who run the community, who work in the businesses in the community, who take care of the kids in the community, who teach in the community, who run the community centers, actually like being in charge of the policies and of the structure of how that community is kept safe.
How does that map onto the university, though? So we're talking about Portland State University in particular.
So that's the work that can be, that could be done if we disarmed campus police. To us, like, the step after not having a police force that we didn't want is to say we do want to be safe. We have a much different vision of safety than that has been imposed by the Board of Trustees, and we want to talk about what it looks like for students to not just pay thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to this institution and into student loans, but to actually build community and to talk about what it looks like to create a community that values people across all identities, across marginalized identities, and to create a community that doesn't just keep people safe from violence, but gives people resources so that they might not find themselves committing violence or experiencing violence in the first place.
Or the precarity that pushes them into that position in the first place.
Yeah, because we truly believe at the Student Union and at many other people in the past and now who advocate against policing that, like, there are not evil people. There are not bad people. Like, we live in a sick world and a sick and capitalist system that prioritizes profit over people.
And so here we are.
And most of the crimes, I'm putting crimes in quotes, that occur have to do with the greed of the wealthy or the desperation of the poor. And even things that you might think wouldn't fit into that, like murder or sexual assault, right, come from people who have been brainwashed by this system into a sense of superiority at the expense of others that compels them to commit violence against them. And if we live in a world where everybody is actually valued for their innate, like, human worth, you probably wouldn't feel compelled to commit that violence, and you probably won't feel compelled to do anything else that you might have an ethical hang up with, because you would have your basic needs.
Are you sort of subbing school shooters right now?
I am subbing school shooters. I'm subtweeting shooters.
Make it hot.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean to, but that's, and it ties in. People often think they disarm PSU.
Well, Susu had to deal with that years ago. Remember when
we still deal with
newspapers
it.
Across the country were reaching out saying after there was, a shooting at a community college.
Community college.
Umpqua.
Yeah.
And they called up Susu to say, don't you all feel so dumb because their campus police were able to spring into action, but, you know, if they were more militarized, they would have been able to respond better.
Yeah.
To which we responded with a resounding, you're wrong.
Yeah, and it's not just then. So yeah, to acknowledge, on October 1st, 2015, there was a shooting at Umpqua Community College, and 8 people were killed. And that is a tragedy, and mass shootings in our communities are like something that needs to be dealt with immediately and speak to a giant failure, not just on our government, but on this entire system. We're not really a failure because it's built on white supremacy. It's built on genocide. So it's meant to be this way. But it is a failure of those who think that they are representing like people in this world and people across this country.
Or who are protecting them. In the case of the sort of mythical good guy with a gun or good cop with a gun being able to stop a school shooter, who of course unloads like how many dozens of clips in a few seconds, kills multiple people and then kills themselves, because these are almost always suicide missions. Yeah. So in case you're just now tuning in and you're thinking, wow, this is some heavy stuff. This is The Struggle on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland. And this is Alyssa Parai, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I'm in the studio with Olivia Pace, one of the organizers of the Portland State University Student Union, recently graduated. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And a member of the Democratic Socialists of America now.
Yeah, now. Here we
are. We are discussing sort of back to school justice.
Yeah. So that's all to say that it wasn't just after Umpqua that we got that question. Like, that is the single most common question about the Disarm PSU campaign, the campaign to disarm PSU campus police. And it's specifically from people who are completely on board but have that single question. And that's something that is a link that I have been talking about a lot that has been made politically generally, is how we have all these mass shootings and the response is we need more protection and we need more protection and we're always so thankful when there are police officers there in throngs to stop school shootings where we might think they may occur, or to stop shootings in general where we might think they may occur. And on the same token, the same people are outraged about police violence, about police killing black and brown people. And the answer lies somewhere else. The answer, we can't just compromise black and brown people because we think that police may stop a school shooting, because the majority of the time they don't. Specifically in school shootings, since we're talking about Portland State, specifically in educational scenarios and educational school shootings, the likelihood that will be stopped by a police officer and by a police officer with a gun shooting that person, it's extremely low. What usually happens is that a civilian with a gun or a civilian who's unarmed stops that person, or that the person self-terminates, kills themselves. And even within that, it's hard to believe because it happens with so much frequency compared to other countries. But the thing that I try to give to people that is hard to hear but is true is that despite all of this chaos right now and how disheartening it is and how tragic and awful it is, the likelihood that a school shooting will happen is still much less likely than a police officer like killing somebody. Police officers kill people at a much higher rate than school shootings happen. They're just allowed to. And when looking at that, you do have to include police killing people who are not your perfect victim, not unarmed. And I think that we should question more broadly what it looks like to say police shouldn't be able to kill people with impunity. There should not just be a force that's allowed to take people's lives away. We should focus more on helping people get out of bad situations.
You're talking about Care Not Cops.
I am talking about Care Not Cops.
So shout out to Care Not Cops.
Hey.
A multi-year campaign that is spearheaded by Critical Resistance. And we've had them on the show a couple of times before, too. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Anna So and Ashlyn Ruga, who've been on the show before, and all of the other comrades who helped to lead that work. So the Care Not Cops campaign touches exactly on that. Mm-hmm. And it says that people who are thriving, communities that are thriving, do not need the police.
Yeah.
And that the point of the care in Care Not Cops is to render services to people rather than just beating them over the head with policing.
Which is proven, right? Like, in a very small example, I'm sure you see on your Facebook, like, there is a trend in secondary schools right now. Not a trend, but more attention is being called to it.
And you are a professional child care worker now.
I'm a preschool teacher. I'm a child care worker. I've been a child care worker, but now I have a little more.
You got, well, you have your degree.
Yeah, I do have my degree. Wow, I forget about that.
Okay, black girls graduate.
We see police being put into schools, and what that results in generally is nothing but chaos for black people specifically, and like kids being sent to trial as adults for like getting in fights in schools because there are police in their schools. On the other hand, we see
shout out to no SROs, PDX, exactly. School resource officers. They've also been on the show. Sophia and Sarah were my guests, and they are helping to train up new people to replace them because they've also just graduated. They graduated from high school, and there are many young people who are in high school now who are fighting against campus or school
resource officers.
So it's a contract that school districts make with local police departments to just keep their beat inside of the school, and it only happens in poor schools and in schools with mostly black and brown people.
And what we see happens on the other token is that when schools like implement things like meditation or other forms of exercise or resources for the kids to let out anger, to speak to people who can help them, resources to help them emotionally regulate, that mitigates the behavior. And isn't the point to mitigate the behaviors that you think are problematic and not to punish people for them? Because punishing people doesn't actually make people better. It makes them angrier. It makes them worse. And something that I think about a lot of social justice issues from a childcare perspective, just because the people that I mostly deal with on a day-to-day basis are children. And so I think through problems day-to-day in terms of how a child might deal with them. And something that I've been taught a lot recently at the job I have right now is that you get the behaviors that you give attention to. You get the behaviors that you give attention to. But when you provide people with something that's positive, when you tell people you can do this, when you give them opportunities to thrive, and I mean actual economic opportunities, actual resources, and in the sense it's because in my classroom that just looks like using positive language and showing them what they can do, but in the real world that looks like, not in the real world, but in the broader world, that looks like human actual tangible economic social opportunities. And when you give people a positive outlet to do well rather than in this case, in quotes, paying attention to the behavior by punishing it and focusing so much on what somebody's done wrong and not at all talking about how this person might be able to do right, why are you surprised that nothing is being solved? People do what they know how. When you give people resources and an opportunity, they do the best they can.
And this, and at the level of an underfunded school, that ends up looking like children being raised in school, trained to grow up and go to jail.
I mean, it's not to at all pathologize people who end up in prison. It actually is very scientific, very material. People are raised in communities that have little resources, so they're in neighborhoods that aren't safe, in schools that aren't safe, with teachers who are underpaid, who don't care about who do care about them, but aren't paid enough to
render that care.
And so those people end up having behaviors that are not ideal for a caring and compassionate person, though they absolutely have the capacity to be and are. And then people who grow up with that lack of resources end up doing things that bring them into conflict with our criminal injustice system and send them to prison. And that's not pathologizing. That is scientific. Why, how do you expect people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps when they don't even have boots on?
Mm-hmm. I just got a note from the Little Big Union.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow afternoon, that's Saturday, August 24th at 2 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
There's going to be a Little Big Union and Portland Food Service basketball tournament.
Ooh.
That they're going to be doing. So if that sounds like something that is up your alley, you want to get a game, it's going to be at Irving Park. And this is anyone who works in food service in Portland that would like to get a pickup game with people who work at the who work at Little Big Burger and are part of the Little Big Union. They are fighting for fair working conditions and a contract, and they're affiliating with the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World. And if that's something that sounds good to you, go out, pick up a game with them. One more time, that's at Irving Park tomorrow, Saturday, August 24th at 2 p.m. And tip off is at 4, but there's going to be pizza, music, and games and prizes beforehand. And that was just before the show started. I got a buzz from one of the comrades in IWW who wanted me to share this on the show. Is there anything else happening in the city that you want people to know about, Olivia?
Yeah. On August 27th at 6 p.m., who we were just talking about, Care Not Cops, and their mother organization, Critical Resistance Portland, are holding a abolition of policing workshop. The point of the workshop is to give participants an understanding and a historical overview of policing in the United States and to provide an abolitionist idea of how to resist and not rely on police officers, which I think is very brilliant and ties back to what we were talking about before of we think that police will keep us safe, but our communities are actually much weaker when we solely rely on people who are allowed to kill us for our safety.
So just so people know, when we're talking about not just Critical Resistance, but the larger abolitionist mm-hmm. movement, if you hear abolitionist and you're thinking about like Susan B. Anthony or, you know, some famous abolitionists from the sort of post-slavery era reconstruction and the lead up to it, the long fight for it. People who consider themselves to be abolitionists in 2019 will usually say that they're prison abolitionists, police abolitionists, but the reason that they say that is because the idea is that the prison system itself, modern policing as we know it, springs directly from the not just the transatlantic slave trade, but the institution of slavery globally and the diaspora of African people throughout the world, that in the United States in particular, which is where Critical Resistance started, the practice of catching runaway slaves is what began to enrich what we now know to be police departments, and the vagrancy laws that were installed during the reign of terror after Reconstruction, which was meant to be a time when the horrors and indignities of slavery, the foundations of the U.S. economic system, were sort of brought to a point of truth and reconciliation, but that was overturned by white terror. And then we get the rise of prisons as we know it. So rather than making freed slaves and their children whole during a Reconstruction era, they just get put into prison for any number of laws that you want to pull out of your rear end. And this is why abolitionists in 2019 say that we have to abolish prisons and police We have to get rid of the reasons that they exist in the first place, which is the racism and the poverty that people are forced to endure that are legacies of the slavery system in the United States of America. I just wanted to give that because I know that some of our listeners here, and not just them, but people more broadly, when they hear abolitionist, they're not exactly sure what that means when they're hearing it for the first time. So I just want to provide that for people.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for people to hear. Because, like, our entire conception of what keeps our community safe is around policing. And if somebody's so unsafe that we can't deal with them, then we'll just send them to prison. And in fact, that the conception of safety that we have as, like, working class regular people and the conception of safety that the criminal injustice system is, like, deviously working off of don't align at all. It's a protection of property and not of people. And it's ironic because that system is born out of capitalism. And they're playing off of these like very like capitalistic notions of what is safe and what is unsafe. It's just like turning over on itself. Like at PSU, we've heard people at board meetings who are students who I suppose are well-meaning, who are against disarming campus police. They'll say, I understand the problems of police brutality in this country,
but,
and I'm not racist and blah, blah, yeah. But like, I live in the dorms and sometimes houseless people are going through my dumpsters outside and I feel really unsafe and scared to take my trash out. And the question,
because when they're looking in the dumpster, they're looking for you, of course, and not food or anything.
And we just see police as benevolent because the question after that is, well, do you think it's okay for that person to be shot? Like, even before, like, even after, like, well, shouldn't that person have food? Well, why does that person have to go through your dumpster to eat? Like, also, and if that makes you afraid, do you think that the consequence should be that that person goes to jail or is shot for making you uncomfortable? And if that is your answer, then I have a lot more questions for you and about you.
What are some effective ways to argue against that for incoming freshmen and, mm-hmm. and people who may join, mm-hmm. not just Portland State University Student Union, but student unions and organizations that are pushing against the sort of militarization of campuses at the college level and underneath the college level too? Like, what, when they come across that idea, what are effective strategies? What should they say?
Well, I think something that has been effective for us with both students and also to kind of push administration is to say, well, like, houseless people, because this is Portland has a houselessness issue. The country has a houselessness issue. But this is also specific to PSU because homeless people are made into a monster at PSU in a way that is like some of the worst thing I've ever seen. And it is helpful to push administration and remind them and to tell incoming freshmen, like, houseless people are not just this like scary boogeyman that comes here and steals from us and hurts our students. Like, houseless people are people, first and foremost, are every kind of person and have basic human rights like everybody else. Secondary to that is that houseless people are also a part of our PSU community. There is no line where there are homeless people and then there are like Portland State students. Like, they are wholly a part of our community because they are people like breathing the same air as us, and because like there are students on the campus who are houseless, because houselessness is not just like people who are so debilitatingly mentally ill that they can't function in society, which exists and like is a problem, but the system that is supposed to be working, according to a lot of people, is failing us continually by raising the price of living, by pushing people out of their homes, by not providing people with proper mental health care, by not paying people decent wages. Like, people are houseless for very simple reasons. It is not just a series of tragedies. What we would call regular people who, quote, did everything right
are become houseless every day.
Wow. So to make houses people, this like singular entity that if we just marginalize from the land that that our campus is on, that isn't even ours,
and the problem goes away,
then we won't have any more crime.
Well, and this is the same idea for prison.
Which is funny because the people who are probably scariest on our campus are the effing fascists and white supremacists who lurk on our campus. I'll just call it out now. White supremacists was just kicked out of student government thanks to people on Instagram.
Is this public?
It is public. It's so, not well known, but it's public.
So maybe get people who are going to Portland State University in the fall, prepare them. What are you talking about?
There is a boy named Philip Arola who is pictured online in a list of known, you know, fascist, white supremacist, racist with Russell Schultz, who is a known alt-right. I can't cuss. A known alt-right person.
You started and, to call them people.
person, I guess. No. And in the picture, Philip Arola, who is a Portland State student, and Russell Schultz, and all the men they're with, who are a series of Proud Boys and other kinds of people, are holding up the little like weak, okay, the white supremacist,
oh, the white
pride,
power.
The white power symbol. Somebody in ASPS, somebody else in the student government was running their mouth online, calling people all kinds of names in the comment of a photo that people thought was a little bit racially questionable. And through that, through calling out this other member, people were like, oh, and by the way, we have this information that we've been sitting on, that I had been sitting on personally, like this person is a white supremacist. Maybe you should all get them out too. And the word, this is gossip at this point, but the word is that they've been pushed out. His name is Philip Arola. I think he's still in student government. He was on the student fee committee, which is in charge of allocating money to all of the resources on campus, the child care centers, the ethnic and racial resource centers, the rec center. So this was a person who was in charge of divvying out money to marginalized people on campus. They've been demoted to just a voting member of your student senate. But yeah, if you're hearing this and you're a Portland State student, maybe call PSU or email Amy Shattuck, who's in charge of student government affairs. Her email is shattuck.pdx.edu.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So if people send that email, do you want to say it again in case someone was writing it down?
shattuck.pdx.edu. And just tell her, Philip Arola is a white supremacist.
And you want him out?
I don't want him in my student government. He doesn't represent me.
Great. Easy. Yeah.
Unless you're a white supremacist, and he does. But I have other questions for you at that point.
So thank you for helping people to be vigilant in the fight against white supremacy, fascism, racism. Again, I have a ask for me to talk about an event. This is the annual Labor Day picnic that happens at Oaks Amusement Park. This is on September 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And this is the annual Northwest Oregon Labor Council Labor Day picnic. And this is when many of the local labor unions and progressive organizations that are helping to build the labor movement come together and all table together. There's games, food, and family fun. Usually you'll get some of the sort of labor friendly candidates and officials who come and hobnob. And if people want to go, again, that's on September 2nd at Oaks Amusement Park, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And that's the Northwest Oregon Labor Council putting that on every year. Labor Day, of course, is the day that is meant to raise the banner of just appreciating people who are the workers in society, and we do that with a picnic every year. And of course that is following May 1st, International Workers' Day. So just so that people know that that's happening, that's mm-hmm. from the Northwest Labor Council.
Another event I'm seeing that I just heard about, that I'm wondering if it was started in Portland, because I have a number of friends who are going, is the Marcha Nacional por la Liberación on November 2nd at noon.
The National March for Liberation.
Is that, have you heard about this?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Okay, talk about it.
It says where it's fighting to abolish ICE for the basic rights of immigrants.
Where and when?
It says on the National Mall, Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., November 2nd at noon.
Is there a Portland contingent yet that's planning on going?
I do not know. I've just heard about it.
November 2nd, let's see if maybe like Gausa, mm-hmm. Oregon, they may do with LA. So maybe let's keep eyes on any sort of group from Portland that wants to go out. If this is going to be a big deal, then we should maybe get some KBOO people, some people in DSA to just go out and represent so that we can have a decent Portland contingent.
Yeah, it's a necessity. I was surprised because I feel like when in the past few years, like in the past 4 years, when people have kind of gotten their feet moving on things that things of a national level, like the last thing I remember is the Women's March, which was needed and wonderful in some ways, but in many ways felt like it failed many of the communities that it alleged to represent. And this feels very different to have something on a national level that is focused on ending the violence of ICE and representing people who are undocumented, who even by people who might claim to be on the left are often marginalized and pathologized and criminalized in a way that you may not expect from people who will call themselves a liberal or progressive. And so that's interesting to me. It makes me happy. But yeah.
Well, I don't think that it's out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. Many people who are sort of middle of the road, you know, mm-hmm. is a term that a lot of people wear with mm-hmm. pride, which is a little bit sad. But, you know, they may say like, oh, I think some social provisions are fine for citizens. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have to be vigilant to make interventions mm-hmm. To be able to say these demands that you're calling for need to go beyond your pathetic settler colonial borders. So
yeah,
that part.
When your moral values align solely with made up imperialist borders.
So
it's very interesting.
Also, I think people should know that Sunday is your birthday. Happy Virgo season, Olivia.
Happy Virgo season. Listen, the sun is 36 degrees in Virgo right now. I'm a Virgo with a Capricorn moon and a Gemini rising. Proudly. And my birthday's on Sunday. That is very true. I am turning 23 years old. This is the most settled into my age that I felt going into a birthday, which is something that my roommate also said to me.
Are you becoming more settled in every year, or is this an outlier?
It varies. 22, I did not feel settled in at all. 22, I feel like, was my last year of being a crazy, I can't say it, but a crazy AB.
Okay.
Like, 22 was my last year of just being a mess. I went into
you 22, hope
I hope yeah I went into 22 a mess and having a very large desire to be a mess, and I'm going into 23 really not a mess and not having a large desire to be a mess either. I have a lot of stability and in my life, just generally from my job to where I live to just other things, and I like it. I'm not sabotaging it.
Well, thank you. Please thrive and stay with us.
I feel like I am, yeah.
Olivia Pace, in case you're just tuning in, is a community leader, recently graduated from Portland State University with a childhood youth and family studies.
Child, youth, and family studies degree and a minor in Black Studies, one of 14 Black Studies minors at Portland State this year, and there was one major, my friend Dejanay McLeod. Yeah.
So Olivia's been helping to lead the Disarm PSU campaign at Portland State University with the student union there since you started, really. Like, when, like, you came in 2014
is when I started college.
But then on May 1st.
It was before that. So I first... Wow.
Let's go down memory lane. So we're talking about 2014, yeah. 5 years ago, when you were a baby. You're just starting. You're a freshman at Portland State University. Take us back.
I'm 22, about to turn 23 right now. And so I started college after I just turned 18 at Portland State. And it was when Michael Brown was killed 2 months before I started college. And so I was starting to have a lot of questions and contextualizing a lot of my experiences, and I had not been around any kind of political organizing or activism, but it was starting to be like when it was getting hot, and like kind of when this new wave of people who we see in the streets now was getting radicalized, if they weren't already, and that was me. And I didn't engage with politics or news or anything the way I do now at all, and I was very confused. But as I started to learn more, I wanted to be engaged. Like, I would watch live streams of protests online and not know how to know they were going on, and that was really frustrating to me. And then one day,
a lot of them were spontaneous, to be fair.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, it wasn't even so much like oh, why didn't I find the event, but like, how do I do this? How do I be a part of the struggle?
Mm-hmm.
The struggle. And
I didn't make it up. The struggle's been happening and being called the struggle.
I know.
Okay.
I know. But we're on the show, The Struggle, which is important.
Thank you. The Struggle on KBOO Community Radio every Friday at 7 o'clock, KBOO 90.7 FM.
Absolutely. No, it's Portland, a coincidence, Oregon. In the moment. I understand mm-hmm. where the name came from.
But the struggle for Black Lives.
The struggle for Black Lives.
Yes.
And so I was... Oh, it was the night that... oh my God, I'm forgetting his name.
Which city?
I'm having a blank. This is really embarrassing on live radio. The officer who killed Michael Brown.
Darren Wilson.
It was the night that Darren Wilson was going to grand jury.
Ferguson, Missouri.
And yeah. In Ferguson, Missouri, he was going to grand jury. And that same day, night that he was going to grand jury, happened to be the night that the Board of Trustees would do the first vote to approve to have an armed campus security. This was December of 2014. And I was walking to the library, which I didn't do very often my freshman year, and I saw a chalking on the ground that said there was a protest that had to do with Black Lives Matter and that had to do with policing on campus at, I think it was 3 o'clock. And I went, I just saw it and I took a picture of it, and then I just went by myself and marched with them to where the Board of Trustees used to have their meetings, which is in the University Hotel, which is a corrupt and horrible entity within the corrupt and horrible entity of Portland State University. And I saw lots of people there who are now my close friends. Kate was there. Kate is my co-teacher now in a classroom where we're teaching children about immigration and all kinds of stuff.
Get them on the right side, please.
Yeah, I met a lot of people who... I know now and have known for years. And then, so I did that, and I kind of kept track of Disarm PSU for a little bit as it was forming. But then the day that everything really started to form was on May 1st, 2015, International Workers Day, the true Labor Day. And Alyssa had joined SUSU since that first protest I just talked about, and was leading a feeder march into Don't Shoot Portland's May Day March that year, which was like
for Freddie Gray, who was killed
in May of that year.
April.
In April. And mm-hmm. then the officers were charged in May. The charges were dropped, of course.
And Baltimore went into mm-hmm. full rebellion.
Yeah.
And thank you, everyone in Baltimore. If anybody's from Baltimore or you know about what happened, you had a hand in it.
Yeah, of course, April, because it was May 1st.
Baltimore was a very important flashpoint.
Yeah. That was a very important year, 2014 to like the beginning of 2016. That is that is largely what's responsible for everything about where we are now.
It helped.
It created
so many millions of people just think a little bit more critically, or sometimes a lot more critically, about police and surveillance and the state itself, because people who had never considered themselves to be radicals by any stretch or even activists were suddenly being surveilled for their activism and were being targeted, and some of them are dead now.
Lots of them are.
So
people from Ferguson are dying.
People were shaken
for just standing up for their community. Again, like, not people who, there are people who are kind of intentional, right? And are like, I am this and this and this. And then there are people who are, where this is regular for them and are just in their community fighting back against violence that is so pervasive that you can't choose or not choose to stand up against it. And these people are dying for what they're doing in all kinds of obscure and horrible and confusing and not so confusing ways. So that, all of that happening around that time, at first was what was radicalizing me. I met Alyssa on May 1st of 2015. And that was like my second protest I'd ever gone to. And it was like the last big May Day protest that we had in Portland. And it was intense, and like, I thought every protest would be like that from then on out. And then I learned that sometimes nobody shows up. Sometimes 20 people show up. Sometimes, like, I've been through a lot since then. And I joined the student union, and I spent that whole summer going to actions and organizing and getting to know Alyssa and getting to know the people who are now my best friends. And then Disarm PSU started, like, properly that summer, and into fall, things popped off, and that's just been my life since then. Disarm PSU is... Disarm PSU has defined my adult life.
It tracks your whole adult life, your whole college career.
I had not been 18 for a year before I joined that campaign.
So what you said I thought was important, and people should not just think that it's nothing, that you engaged in protest, but then you took the step to join an organization.
Absolutely, yeah.
After activating, because like you said, it was a great big protest that day. It was militant and had many people, and really helped to shake things up. But sometimes, like you said, it's small. Sometimes 20 people show up to a protest, and that can be really discouraging to someone. If you are looking to get involved and you show up to a protest and it's not what you were hoping for, well, if you join an organization that is doing good work, you commit yourself to a cause that goes beyond the immediate demand or call to action or cry out for support at a protest, well, then you're really onto something. And I think that you are one of the better examples of what it looks like when you go from being angry about injustice to then being passionate about organization.
Well, and the important piece to that, one of the important pieces to that is that for you to be able to, a lot of the times what it takes for you to be able to go from engaging in protest and just being angry to joining an organization and being strategic and doing the day-to-day work is to have somebody who can tell you to do that and who can take you under their wing. And that's what you did for me. If it wasn't for you, I don't think things would be the way they are now at all. And I know that I did a lot of it myself, but if it wasn't for you, I think it might have looked very, 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 very different.
Same goes for Teresa Rayford, who brought me into Don't Shoot Portland, and into Jamie Partridge that brought me into the socialist movement. And you're continuing to bring new people, recruiting new people to the movement now.
Yeah, that is wild to me. It's wild. And it's heartening to see new people coming in every day, and that people, that things feel like they're slowing down when there's not always big stuff going on in the street wherever you live. But what's heartening about actually being in the struggle, because being in the struggle does not mean going to protest whenever you see them on Facebook, being in the struggle means like being in an organization or being plugged into your community and doing things on the day-to-day, whether they're in a proper organization or whether they're just in your community with the people you know, making things work and making things better. And so when you do that work, the heartening part about it, even though it's much harder than just going to protest, is that you see how things move. Like, you talk to people, you engage with people, you see in your community how perspectives are changing, how conditions are changing, how people are becoming more hopeful about what the future might bring, or more angry about their conditions and more willing to fight back. Climate degradation adds this a whole other like existential aspect to it that is pretty frightening and disheartening. But outside of that, I feel pretty optimistic most of the time.
Well, one of the organizations that helps to link people who are making those first steps to really dedicating themselves to the struggle mm-hmm. is, of course, Portland Jobs with Justice. Mm-hmm. And I'm the co-chair of the board there. But what is so important about what we do is the solidarity mm-hmm. calendar. So Jobs with Justice is in some action, some protest, some picket workplace action just about every day. So if people are listening and some of this stuff that we are speaking about today and every week at 7 o'clock jives with you, then jwjpdx.org and look for the solidarity calendar. You can see when there are upcoming events that you might want to participate in. Then I'll see you out there. We were just at the Fred Meyer, because Fred Meyer, we found out, is paying their women workers less than men.
Ooh, so spicy.
Yeah, so yeah. The union, UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers, are helping to keep their feet to the fire with other union allies that are in the AFL-CIO, the American Federation of Labor, and the Congress of Industrial Organizations in Oregon, pairing with Jobs with Justice, who's helping to turn out people to their actions. There was just a successful one now, and Fred Meyer, owned by Kroger, mm-hmm. a conglomerate mm-hmm. grocery, is going to have to say something about this because it's out there now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get pay equity in your scale or else.
Yeah.
This thing can escalate. People go to Fred Meyer all the time. Don't be a fool.
Yeah. That basketball event earlier, also I was going to say, sounds like
oh, yeah,
that a was great thing to go to if you are somebody who feels like you're being treated poorly in your workplace.
So I'll bring it up again.
You can fight back. You don't just have to take it.
That was the Little Big Union. There's a basketball tournament. This is at Irving Park, Saturday, August 24th. That's tomorrow, 2 p.m. Tip-off is at 4. There's going to be food, music, and games. And we just want to boost whatever people are hearing about in yeah. town, so that more people can know about what's happening in the struggle.
Yeah. And again, like, you don't just have to take lying down the different aggressions and like digs that your boss takes against you. You don't just have to take it. You don't just have to be underpaid. You don't just have to work long hours without pay or without adequate pay. You don't just have to like be afraid that you're gonna lose your job for like minor offenses. You can fight back with your coworkers. People fought and died for you to have the little things that you have at your job right now, like your 10-minute break, your lunch, your unpaid lunch, your paid vacation days.
Yeah, overtime.
And you can push forward for more than just that, and you deserve it.
Yeah, the 40-hour work week,
mm-hmm.
the 8-hour day, the weekend. Mm-hmm.
The weekend.
brought to you by the labor movement when it was much more militant, and it will be again.
It will be again.
You know, this week there was a plan rolled out by Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders.
he wants to make class war cool again.
And he is, frankly. I mean, meeting with Cardi B in that nail salon.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's never felt cooler.
Cardi B.
Who we love. Famous. Friend of the show.
I wish. Oh, my God. If Cardi B ever comes to Portland, I would love to Ooh, interview
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's come out for Sanders, but not just Sanders. I mean,
a lot of things.
She's coming out for a free education, healthcare, housing.
And she's been pro Bernie since the jump, which says a lot about a person, right? I don't expect celebrities. I do not take any political insight from celebrities seriously most of the time. But when somebody is pro-Bernie from the jump, like, she was never caving for Hillary. She was always pro-Bernie, which says a lot about a person. And you should follow her. And you should also not, like, let scrape from the bottom of the barrel just so we can beat Trump. You should fight for more. We deserve more than just not Trump. So be like Hardy, our friend of the show.
One of the things that he's talking about, and not just him, but people who are also advocating for a more clear path to organizing on the job. So that is what he's been pushing for. Just this last week, he unrolled it. So let's see what kind of effect that has on people who are listening to him and who are just reading the headlines and who suddenly see someone talking about organizing on the job, fighting back against the boss, fighting for your own interests, class war that we've been losing.
Absolutely.
So that's what's happening. So we got a note from the producer. That's Jerron. Shout out. Thank you, Jerron.
Thank you, Jerron.
So this is Alyssa Pariah and Olivia Pace.
Hey, it's my birthday on Sunday. My Venmo is Olivia-Pace. Capital O L I V I A dash capital P A C E. Send me some money. It's my birthday.
So
most of the work I do is unpaid.
Anybody else who does community organizing, that your birthday is coming up.
And the time is 8 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. And before we start anything, we're going to go straight to important messages from the KBOO community.
Are you bored or unsatisfied with your daily activities? Do you long for a new, exciting experience? If the answer is yes and you're under 21 just like me, then you should consider adding a once-a-week KBOO Youth Collective meeting to your schedule. Side effects will probably include extreme happiness, uncontrollable fits of laughter, a great group of new friends, and yummy snacks. KBOO Youth Collective can cause sudden bouts of inspiration and a yearning to share your words or your inner thoughts with the local community. If joining the collective sounds like a cure for your boredom and lack of an extraordinary after-school activity, then write us at youth@kbu.org or visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, or come into one of our Wednesday meetings for a scare-free, risk-free, and always cost-free trial.